Hey geeks, do you love comics, collectibles, and TCG? Well, here at Cardboard Cave, we have the place for you. Pass by Capitan Granuja Comics and Games and find all your favorite geeky items there. Look for them at Facebook or Instagram or call them at 787-659-7003. A store blessed by Nicole Bolas. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Cardboard Cave MTG. We are sorry that last week we couldn't do our episode due to some, I would say, scheduling issues and as well light issues. That night we were already set to go live, but then some of us had issues with the light, like we have been having these couple of weeks here in Puerto Rico. Sadly, well, we have a new light company, and you know, it is what it is, guys, but we are still here to give you great content. So like every day that I say, remember, you guys can go ahead in the top. If you're on Facebook, you can go ahead on the top, and if you're on YouTube, down below in the description, you can go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just clicking that link, go ahead and subscribe to our YouTube channel. All of our Facebook lives are there, and as well, future new content that we're going to be making. We are literally every day, not every day, but the times that we can't talk, we go ahead, me and the crew have thought about a lot of great ideas for you guys in regards to giving you a lot of good content to see if we can go keep growing to give you amazing, better content for all of you. And as well, if you guys like to listen to audio format, go to your favorite platform. It could be Spotify, Apple TV, anyone that you think, you guys can go ahead and look for us as Cardboard Cave MTG. The latest episode is already live. This episode 23, where we talk about the Forgotten Realms spoilers. So tonight, at no further ado, I'm going to be presenting our two hosts. Sadly, Chris is not going to be with us. He is right now playing Sealed. I think if I'm not mistaken, he is in Florida playing the set already, because tonight is the pre-release. So remember, if you guys are looking for Forgotten Realms items, go ahead and go to Capitan Granuja's Comics and Games in Facebook and in TCG Player. Like that, you guys can get your items tonight online or on their Facebook page. So no further ado, I will be presenting our host right now, the one and only, the one that has made like a bajillion movies that we've mentioned before, Emmy, Oscar, Tony, I don't know how many awards he has done or gotten, is the one and only Alejandro Orengo.
Oh, I froze again. I'm here?
Oh, you're here. Second.
I'm frozen? Why am I frozen? Oh, God. Oh, no. I'm frozen. Give me a second.
No problem.
I'm good. But I'm just...
You good?
I guess the OBS never opened up. Never. Oh, failure to start output. Anything, I need to get out and come back in. I was just going to say I've made I have no Oscars. I have no Emmys and no Tonys. And clearly no budget. Give me a second. I'll be right back.
No problem. And then the one and only, the master of Cube, that literally, if you have any questions on building a cube, or if you have any questions in regards of combos for CDH or anything regards of Magic the Gathering, go ahead and talk to our one and only master, JP.
Now we can't experience the beautiful face of Orengo. Oh, there he is.
I told you I screwed up a little bit. I was messing too much with the OBS because my wall is not green. So
now you're just chilling in the ocean.
Yeah, the thing is, the wall is not green anymore. It's like a blue-gray. So I've been trying to... I literally downloaded an app. It's a color picker. But of course, the camera is not like 100% faithful to the color. So I was like, okay, this is the color, right? Okay, I put it in OBS and it's like, that's not the color. And then turned me like fully gray. So I'm still tweaking it. So hopefully by the next podcast, I'll have this better. Because see, you can see my outline and stuff. It looks a little,
yeah,
you know. Work in progress.
And again, like, I want to mention to our viewers that at least we have already gotten one plan in motion that is that for the future set, that I don't remember what's the name of the future set, but for the future set,
the vampires and werewolves.
The vampires and werewolves. So in the next set, if it does make any changes in the standard meta, or there's brews with these cards, we will be trying to see if we can play any type of brews that we see on untapped, like that. You guys can go ahead and see how these decks work. You know, due to that, some of us are in different towns and COVID is still in motion. I know that there's the vaccine. I know that people right now are going crazy without their masks, but at least here in Cardboard Cave, we want to take care of each other. So we still haven't planned future podcasts in person. So we want to maintain regulations just in case, you know. COVID is still not over, guys. But guys, so this new set has come out, and not only that, it has literally I would say bring a lot of players back to Magic. It has brought the community once again to make a lot of type of brews in the meta.
It's impacted Standard quite a bit compared to other sets. It's actually quite surprising that the core set is the one that actually impacted Standard.
No, yeah, it's like what was it called? Throne of Eldraine. Throne of Eldraine was that other set that made Standard like
the cancer horrible. That it is.
Yes. Exactly, it made it the cancer that it is. You know,
to the extent that currently there's a new format in Arena, just Magic 2022. It just doesn't include any of those Eldraine cards.
Yeah, almost by necessity, because it's just too much.
I actually gotta say that I played the event that they had that was just to test out like these pre-made decks in Arena for the new set, and I had a lot of fun with the whole venture mechanic and everything. I was at I was speaking to Orengo in the afternoon. I told him, like, I don't remember the name of the card, god dang it, it's the one black and a 2/5/5 zombie wizard.
Azorak?
Azorak. Yes, Azorak. I love that card so much. I'm like, Orengo, that Tazri commander that I want to build, I need to have that card in it.
Okay. So there's already combos with it in Legacy.
Yeah.
You play Aloran, which is a 2 green-green for an enchantment, and it reads that any player can just play 3-costed or less creatures for free, and as Flash. And since he returns itself back to your hand, unless you've completed Tomb of Annihilation, you just never complete Tomb of Annihilation, and you just go, wee, just bouncing him and playing him and bouncing him and playing him. You're probably going to do Dungeons of the Mad Mage. That's the one that's going to draw you 3 cards and you play something for free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's insane.
Yeah,
in EDH, you can do it too.
You can do Alluren, but you could also do Rooftop Storm. He happens to be a zombie.
True.
And Rooftop Storm makes it zombies plus 0.
Yeah, that's true. You're sticking a Dimir zombie deck, which there's a couple of really good Dimir zombies in there. But it's actually more of an interesting challenge if you just have him as a commander. And try to make the combo with mono black, which is doable, but there's far less cards that interact with it. This is like 4 or 5, I think. I saw an EDH Shrek earlier today because John was like, oh, I want to make it. I'm like, John, you can break that card. You don't need to limit yourself, buddy.
So, on the top of my head, I think like Erratic Portal to bounce him back.
Nobody bounces himself. There's cards that give discounts. There's a creature that says creatures you control cost 2 less to cast, and they have -1/-1. So if you have a way to basically,
I know, Carnival of Souls.
There you go.
So Carnival of Souls reads, it's one of my favorite pet cards. I try to stick it everywhere, and I always end up cutting it down because it's a great card, but you usually kill yourself if you play that card.
Yeah.
So Carnival of Souls reads, it's 1 and a black for an enchantment. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you lose a life and make a black.
Mm-hmm.
So if your commander is cost two less, he just cost a black. So you play him once.
That's it.
And just keep on doing it. Problem is, you kind of start losing life every single time.
That's the issue right there.
The second issue is, if you don't win and you pass, mm-hmm. Carnival of Souls reads, whenever a creature, doesn't have to be a creature you control.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's playing tokens and just makes 10 tokens, you just lost 10 life. You made 10 mana, but you just lost 10 life.
But think about this. Isn't there a dungeon that gives you life? And how much life does that give you? Because I don't remember.
I think the second dungeon... Like, there's not, one of the dungeons that does give you life.
Dungeon of the Mind Mage gains you one life.
Okay, so you offset one.
And then later on, I think like in the fifth room, it's like three life, I think.
It basically offsets a lot of it. A lot of the damage you're going to get from Carnival Souls. It offsets
You'd be surprised how many times I've died to my own Carnival.
But it offsets four of the seven damage you're going to take because it's seven levels.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
Offsetting four damage out of seven, you're going to be weeing so much, you're going to go basically through your whole deck and people are going to hate you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Another thing is you're casting it. So if you have something like an Aetherflux Reservoir, you just win. That's a win.
Just win faster. Yeah, you just win faster.
Wait, doesn't Aetherflux Reservoir give you another life?
You know, it gives you one life for each other spell you cast.
So it gives you one life,
then two life, then three life, then four life, then five life.
Mm-hmm.
And you can stack it. Yep. So if you cast it in response to the trigger, you cast it again. And in response to the trigger, you keep on casting it because if something with a Lurin or something like that, you can gain, I think, like depending on the amount of stat times you stacked it. Let's say I stacked it 10 times, you just gain 30 life.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's beautiful cancer right there.
Instead of going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you just gain 30 life.
Yep. You're gonna venture.
Yeah, that's the type of card that when you do, let's say my commander, I want it to be Tazri. So people that do not know the commander, let's just say that we go to a play group, all the four of us, and then we're like, hey, let's add two more people. Only you three know what's inside the commander, and you guys know what's gonna happen when that card comes out and with the combo. Like, if the other two don't know, it's like, oh well, there goes John doing his loop and going nuts, going crazy. But before we continue with the first topic, I wanna highlight a recent commander show that I'm watching. It's not a podcast, it's an actual channel that the only thing that they do is like they invite people and they play commander, and it could be CDH.
Is it I Hate Your Deck?
Yes, it's I Hate Your Deck.
Okay.
I found them recently too.
I found them recently as well. I've been seeing them because like I'm working from home, so what I do is that I have my computer with the show in mute, so I just let it run. And occasionally I just look at it and see what plays they're doing. But it's really interesting because they are sponsored by Dragon Shield, and it's like the first Magic the Gathering content that I see that they're sponsored by Dragon Shield. And it's really cool because Dragon Shield even do their sleeves, because you can do custom sleeves with Dragon Shield. I think it's on their website. But it's really cool because I think in like three of the episodes that I saw, like one behind the other one, the first match lasts like 10 minutes because they combo off. Like, oh, well, I do this, I go infinite, I kill you, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Out of the recent things I enjoy about that show is that they first sit down and they discuss Rule Zero. What power level are we playing immediately? Yeah. Okay, so there's an episode with the professor,
yeah,
and it gives you an idea how what the power level people think their deck is and what it actually is. So they say, oh, let's play this like a 7 to 8, because one of them wants to play Belby, and Belby can be quite fast. Mm-hmm. But it's not like he's not doing anything oppressive, it's just really fast. And everyone else, one of them is playing the Enchantress deck, one is playing Lonus, Cryptozoologist, and the Professor's playing Taysa.
Mm-hmm.
The Taysa combo, yeah. The Professor got outclassed extremely fast. The Lonus deck had an Urza with a Keenan, the Prodigy, that doubles your mana, and he just went off infinite mana out of nowhere, and he's like, yeah, maybe. Like it was like turn 4, turn 5.
That's a 7.
And yeah, that was a 7 for them.
Going infinite is a 7.
And the Professor also had an infinite combo. And,
okay, going 7. Okay, power level 7 with an Urza and a Kinnan. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was like turn 4. And he had just played his Taysa.
Yeah.
And then he just loses.
Great.
And like, ah, yes, this is a 7.
Damn. Yeah, I remember.
You understand the differences of the power levels and how everyone just views the power levels differently. They played the same game again, another game. They just ran it back. And I forgot who, I don't remember who won.
I don't remember who won.
I know that everyone got to play their stuff, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a more balanced game.
One of the other things that I like about this show is that they have, like, special rules. One of them is if you have 3 take backseat counters, you lose automatically.
Oh, that's cool. I dig that.
Yes, like
strike number one.
Exactly. So there was this one of the cast members. He made a play, so he took back the artifact and the land, and they were like, "That's 2 take backseat counters, man. So one more, and you dead." I'm like, wow, shit, I like that, because there's a lot of times.
I'm pretty sure they were just joking, but it's actually
no. Actually, they put him a dice. Put him a dice, like, you have 2 take backseat counters. Like, they take it like, I want to like sit down and enjoy every episode to see like what other special rules they have in regards to when they play Commander, because this should be really cool to have like special rules. Like, I remember you guys remember in game nights that they played the cube commander one, that some of the commanders had like
additional colors
or additional rulings depending on like what you draft. So it's really cool that if you can sit down with your friends or with your play group and just like, hey, look, we can put some special rules like in the play group, like that you can enjoy the game a little bit better or make it a little bit more challenging. You know, it should be really cool. So let's go to our first topic of tonight. This week has been really interesting because a couple of cards got banned. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that one card got like uber banned because people were already tired of what this card does, and then the other one got banned and the set has not yet to be released. So the cards that we're talking about are these two beautiful cards, that it's Hull Breacher and the Book of Exalted Deeds. So let's go ahead and read Hull Breacher. Hull Breacher is a blue and a 2 creature, Morfolk Pirate, 3/2 that has flash, and it has this effect. If an opponent would draw a card except the first one they draw, in each of their draw steps, instead you create a treasure token. The next card is the Book of Exalted Deeds. That's one of the legendary artifacts that is going to be coming out, I think it's next week in the new set, that you can play in your pre-release at your local game store tonight, if you are in an LGS tonight. So it's a 3 white legendary artifact that says, in the beginning of your end step, if you gain 3 or more life, this turn, create a 3/3 white angel creature token with flying. The other effect is that you pay 3 white, tap, exile the Book of Exalted Deeds, put an enlightened counter on target angel it gains. You can't lose the game, and your opponent can win the game. Activate only as a sorcery. So this is really interesting. I did not understand before JP continues. I didn't understand why was the reason for the Book of Exalted Deeds until I sat down and read an article before the show, and I saw the magical combo with the faceless Haven legendary land. I mean, I was like, oh, it makes all sense now. It makes all sense.
Yeah. I think I have a spicy take for the Book of Exalted Deeds.
Okay.
Go.
Yeah. So one, it's only banned in Arena for the format of 2022. So it's not banned in normal, sorry, the rest of Arena, and it's not banned in anywhere else. It's just banned specifically in that. Mm-hmm. The second thing is the little spicy thing. I don't think, before that, I don't think that it's really that broken. Okay. And the real spicy thing is land destruction, land removal in the format.
There is. Not in 2022.
There's a. I'm pretty sure. I'm like a
Field of Ruin, I think, and Came of Theros.
I'm gonna
which
go for
is the problem.
Field of Ruin, yeah, it came back in Theros.
Which in 2022 means that there isn't land destruction unless you play janky red commons that probably cost 5 mana. Which you could, but then you are creating a problem that doesn't need to be created.
I'm thinking of a card that came out Cleansing Wildfire. One in a red, destroy target land. Its controller may search the library for a basic land card, put it into the battlefield top, then shuffle their library.
I get you.
It's like it's there. Like I understand. It's red. Mm-hmm. Not everyone has access to the color if you're playing different decks. But it's there. The spicy take is I feel like Field of Ruin should be evergreen.
I agree. That's not a spicy take. It should be because this is the second time Wizards
becomes a problem. Field of Ruin, not Field of Ruin, Field of the Dead.
Yeah. Exactly. It's the second time. They should know better. They should know better. And it should be an evergreen. I totally agree.
So,
yes.
Against this is it was, you're going to make the lands a bit homogenous for standard. It's like, that's not a problem. But then you would have two evergreen lands, would be Fabled Passage and Field of Ruin. And I feel like that's okay.
Yeah.
But a lot of people would be like, okay, if you're using those lands as evergreen, then what's stopping from other cards from becoming evergreen? Eventually, the format becomes homogenous. This thought process the same way people say about Commander, how it's become homogenous.
Yeah, I know.
And so if you keep adding more staples that keep on being forever present in Standard, it's gonna become like this homogenous format. And I was like, but these cards are good for the format.
Exactly. It's like
Field of Ruin is fair.
Yeah.
Land destruction.
Yeah.
For removing pesky lands that are annoying. It's only when you combine it with something else, and usually those cards that you combine it with them aren't in Standard. Those are Modern, Legacy, plus. Not in Standard. So as long as they're like, you know, they have that in mind, then maybe lands won't be a problem. But it's a problem right now. So I guess this is the way. I don't understand why they can't just emergency print something.
Because these sets are made in advance. But I am assuming that probably Field of Ruin will probably come, if it's not in the Innistrad set, it will be somewhere soon. Because they do have a tendency of repeating it every other cycle. like when Field of the Dead became a problem is because Field of Ruin wasn't available in that moment, but then
they just didn't unban it anyways.
Yeah. True. But I'm just saying, yeah, it should be like an evergreen. There are evergreen cards. I know that people don't like that.
Apparently, Shock is legal.
Yeah, exactly. Negate, you know. Yeah. There's a couple that are always there, or variations. There's always like a fight card. There's always a type of card that in green destroys enchantments or artifacts or both, or they do three things at one.
I mean, there's like two of them that do three things.
I know, exactly. Because they keep adding more to green, but you know. But there's always variations on these cards. So having Field of Ruin, it's a good thing. There's only four ofs. I mean, it's not like you can go nuts with it.
It's a colorless land anyways.
Yeah, it's a colorless land. It's a utility land. Utility lands are not bad. And, you know, every other set always has like weird ass utility lands, like either creature lands, like right now in D&D, or like in the past few sets, we had the castle lands, the ones that you scry or draw cards. Like eventually you can only destroy so much, so having these lands that destroy other lands, those utility lands, is a good thing, because then you turn into this problem where you don't have an answer when something slips through the cracks, because I don't know if they thought that this would happen or not. Maybe they did. Maybe, like I said, an Innistrad will put Field of Ruin and it'll be fine.
They banned it not because it's strong, but because it's annoying.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's not strong because
players are annoying and they're not banned.
I saw like, you know, 10 new brews, and I saw a couple of decks trying to make this happen. And it happens.
It happens.
It doesn't happen all the time. It's not like super horrifying.
You have a window. Like, oh
yeah.
You make Faceless have a creature, destroy it.
The creature. Yeah, because that's sorcery speed. You can answer to it. There's a couple of ways to do this. The thing is, in 2022 standard, there's no answer to it. That's exactly the problem. So I get why it had to be banned there. Like, there's just
but
no
like,
answer.
Is there no instant speed removal?
There is, but what if...
Is there no artifact or enchantment removal?
I think that there is, but...
But having like a catch-all with the land, I think, is the thing that you're missing out on. Hence why Field of the Dead was such a problematic card. Granted, it's not the same because it doesn't turn into a creature. It literally is just a land. Yeah, I feel like this is fine. It's not like a broken card. But since there's not a catch-all answer to this, and you need a catch-all answer because if they pull this off, you just can't win. You know, yes, you do have moments to answer it. You know, with the Faceless Slave as a creature, you have moments. But what if you didn't have removal at that moment? Yeah. And this person accelerated the white mana, and then he had all the mana, and then turn four. Oh, Faceless Haven and something else, and then I just turn and whatever, and then just fuck you. And then you're screwed. You're screwed, and then you have no way to win because it's just literally, well, you draw your deck or do whatever the hell you want. I'm gonna go grab a bite to eat while you keep trying to play Magic on your own, because you're gonna lose.
Remember those that time in Hour of Devastation with the Approach of the Second Sun, that there was always this issue that you countered the first one, not the second one, and then there was a very big confusion in which one you would counter, because there were judges that would say no, you have to counter the first one, and then there was others.
I still don't understand which one you have to counter.
You have to counter the first one.
Oh, the first one. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you have to counter the first one because the card states is as soon as you cast the second one.
It's like an Ulamog. Mm-hmm. You cast it and you won. Because the first one already resolved, so like in the deck, it knows that you already activated the first one. But if you stop the first one, the deck or the Approach of the Second Suns that are left in your deck don't know that the first one has been activated yet.
Just counter all of them.
Yeah, I know that ideally you want to counter all of them.
Yeah, the ideal is counter all of them. But the thing is that I remember in that time, in that block, that it was... big issue because judges did not know which one was the one that you had to counter. You know, you had an answer of differently. One judge would tell you, oh, it's the first one. And then there was another judge that might tell you, no, it's the second one. And you would be confused. So give me 1 second, guys. So thank you for the follow, Jackson A690. And hello, welcome to Cardboard Cave Podcast.
I would compare it more to way back when, almost 4 years, when Reflector Mage got banned in Standard.
It was before Shadow.
There's the banned flash deck. Basically, you collect a company and a few flash creatures, like Spot Queller, and you just went off at instant speed with utility creatures and smacking face. And the card that got banned was Reflector Mage. Because Reflector Mage, when it enters... Okay,
so thank you very much, Jackson, that he saw the link through promotion. Yeah, is that I did get to put the Twitch, my Twitch channel through like a small promotion. So
that's nice.
Yeah, I was like, I needed to get the channel rolling again like it was before. So, and I know that we do the podcast in my Twitch channel. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just give it a shot. See how it works.
Okay. So Reflector Mage got banned. Banned Flash was like the premier deck at the moment.
Yeah.
But Reflector Mage got banned, and their reasoning was because it is unfun to play against. Not because it's strong, because at the moment it got banned, the deck was slowly losing power. Because a lot of other cards had rotated, and they had tried to replace the cards that rotated. So this Banned Flash lasted at least, since the rotations at the moment in Standard were like going through an awkward stage where Standard was really, really, really big, extremely big. Like it had at least like 12 more sets. It was something really, really strange while they were transitioning to how Standard works right now. But there was a lot of sets, and when a few of those sets left, they had to like replace a few cards, and then another few of those sets left, and they replaced a few cards. So the deck was lowering in power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the deck was still like pretty top tier, but not the best, they banned Reflector Rage, and then it just kind of died.
Yeah.
You know what other card I can remember off the top of my head that was another issue in regards of ruling? They didn't ban it, but they fixed the issue with the ruling was Ramunot Ruins.
Ramunot Ruins.
It was the red desert land that you would pay for, sacrifice the desert, and it was not a target opponent. Each opponent will lose 2 life.
Yep.
Yeah.
That card, you could have paid the 4 and sacrificed the land to continue the effect. Then due to people saying, oh, the card is annoying, the card is broken, they changed the ruling that you cannot sacrifice the activated when you have to sacrifice another desert. And then I remember because, dang it, I had the name of the MTG player that was playing Mono Red by that time in Worlds. Thanks to that change of ruling, he couldn't win the last match. He lost because he only had that one Ramunot Ruins, but he had the 4 lands to activate the ability. But
I don't understand.
It was an interesting time.
That's why they started including the ping land. There was a desert that made colorless mana.
Sunscorched Desert.
Yep. You will play it and just ping an opponent for 1. Which, beneficial for red, but initially they weren't playing that because with Hazoreth and that land, you didn't need the other land. It was like you were too fast already. So they had to...
Actually, in the version that at least in that time that I was playing Standard, in my version, I would run the four Sunscorched lands. Okay.
7/14/2017. If a desert has an ability with a cost of sacrifice a desert, you can sacrifice that desert to pay the cost for its own ability.
The thing is, the judges didn't rule like that, and that's what got him screwed over.
Okay.
Because you know what happens sometimes in those big events, the judges make a weird call, on the moment, and that's what screwed him
in
over.
That
I do
world.
Remember that match. I do remember that match. He literally lost because he's like, I can do this, and then they were like, no, you can't. And he's like,
you can't. Exactly.
In that whole event,
that was like a new rule that they added in judging because people were tired that, I sacrificed Ramonat Ruins.
Maybe the judges were confused because sometimes those judges make a weird call and they just keep it. Because I remember in Yu-Gi-Oh! They used to do that sometimes too, where they make weird calls in those YCSs or big events and they just stick with it for the remainder of it. And then people will be like freaking out because like, we know that it doesn't function like this. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? But then it's just bad calls. Judges sometimes just make bad calls in these card games.
It is true.
And it's like, detrimental.
Just adding to the Yu-Gi-Oh portion, like when I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh, there was this combo that I made in one of my decks. It was Tower of Babel with the barrel behind the door. So what I would do is chain link my Towers of Babel to get to the 8,000 life points and then use barrel behind the door and be like, oh no, I don't take damage. You take the damage. One judge told me because of the wording, the card does not work like that. I'm like,
that's what I'm saying.
I'm like, what? The card says it right there.
When I was there into Yu-Gi-Oh, a lot of judges would make bad calls in the YCSs. Bad calls that when they make the right, they used to write articles because there wasn't like streamings or anything. I read the articles. And then you would read the articles and then you would see judges making bad calls in the article. And then the article would actually address that the judge made a bad call in the same article. That's how bad it was sometimes. But it's a judge saying it in the moment. He's like the final authority. And then the player could like, you know, ask for another judge or whatever. But then, you know, just some rule.
There was a time, guys. There was a time that even Wizard of the Coast had their own magazine.
Oh, that's true.
With articles, yes.
And freebie cards.
Yeah.
I think they gave you like one of them gave you like a mana drainer, mana crypt.
Yeah, sure. And there was one that I forgot. It's very expensive when you check it in TGP. The one that is like a crater that's in the reserve list, I think it is.
There's probably a crater like a Gaia's Cradle.
No, the card is the one that is like a ball, and he's like dripping. I don't remember the name of the card. I
know Chaos Orb.
Chaos Orb, that one. That one of the promos was a Chaos Orb.
Oh, that's cool.
That was a long time ago.
Right? The one that you're like supposed to rip into pieces.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
So we've been talking about bad calls, but you know what isn't a bad call?
Oh.
Reading the card explains the card.
I know.
Thank you.
That would be true, except bad calls.
Exactly, except bad calls. That's the issue.
Banning Hole Breacher is not a bad call.
Okay. So I'm gonna read Hull Breacher again for everybody that's going in again, coming in. So Hull Breacher again is a blue and two, creature merfolk pirate, flash, and it says if an opponent would draw a card except the first one they draw in each of their draw steps, instead you create a treasure token, and it's a 3/2. So why do you say, JP, that this was a bad call?
No, this was not a bad call. It's a good call.
Oh, this was not a bad call. Okay.
This is a problem card as soon as it entered the format. So the card you compare this to is Notion Thief. Notion Thief reads in the same way, but instead of making you treasures, you just draw the cards your opponents would have drawn.
Yep.
The detail with good deck making is that if you draw more cards, you just have more cards. But if you draw more cards and then you have the mana to play them, that's when it becomes a problem. So if you make your deck right, let's say you have Hold Breacher out, you cast a wheel, everyone discards their hand, draw 7. Oh wait, no, they don't draw 7. You create 21 treasures, and you just drew 7 cards. So yep. You just play those cards.
Yep.
Generally speaking, you just discarded their hand, made mana, and drew more cards.
Dang it, why didn't I think about this cards for
flash.
Gold?
Also, yeah, it's flash. And then the second thing is, if you make your deck right, you can just keep on doing something like this. Over and over and over deck. And before this got banned, I was just messing around with the crafting of blue-black deck. And I just, well, I guess the way this deck wins is by decking itself. Might as well just prevent my opponent from drawing. And I just sticked Hull Breacher in. And I put like Notion Thief and all those cards. And it was a lot more consistent once Hull Breacher got in. Play.
Yeah.
This effect is very similar to Smothering Tide. Now, there's a very big difference. One, Smothering Tide isn't in white. That's a huge difference. But it doesn't have flash, and it's preventable since you can pay 2 mana.
People can still draw their land, their cards. You're not preventing them from getting their cards.
If you cast a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that everyone's tapped out. You cast the wheel. Everyone discards their hand. Draws 7, so now they have 7 cards in hand. You still make basically 21 treasures, and you still drew like your 7 lands. There's your 7 cards. So you can keep playing stuff, but they have cards in their hand. They could react with, I don't know, any type of counter magic, removal. They still have cards to play during their next turn.
Mm-hmm. Brown 28 says, hey man.
The reason I feel like Notion Thief is fine is because you're just drawing more cards and you don't have the mana to keep playing. The mana is a restriction.
Wouldn't you compare Hull Breacher more with the Gnar's set?
The problem with Narset
no,
is they only lose the cards in hand, but it's like JP says, it goes back to the thing that you don't have mana to play. Well, I'm sorry. You do have the mana to play, but Narset is... I'm sorry.
No, you don't Narset, have the mana.
No, exactly. You don't have the mana. That's exactly the difference. The Hull Breacher comes in with flash, so you can flash it in when everyone's tapped out. You untap, you still have 3 mana, because obviously you played Hull Breacher. You can play a Windfall, or basically any equivalent of a Windfall. And then you screw everyone else, 21 mana, 7 new cards, people are pissed at you, and you get to just play Magic while everyone else is not playing Magic. Gnar said the difference is you will draw those cards, they will draw only one each, but they you don't have mana to play everything. That's the difference.
Production is the problem.
Yeah, and Narset can be destroyed, it comes at sorcery speed, you can do so many things, man.
You know, attacker, destroy planeswalkers, exile, bounce. There's just different ways.
So T Crown says that he passed by because he saw the promotion. Thank you very much. Man. Then he's like, when next are you streaming, man? So next stream will be next. Oh, we do our podcast every Friday at 9:30. And I do my live streams in the Twitch channel every Wednesday. So, and what we're trying to do here, trying to do for the future, is that on some Wednesdays, we will be doing content for both pages. So we will be doing content in the Twitch channel, plus in our Facebook page and YouTube channel, like that we can play some Commander or test out some decks from the standard format or modern of Magic the Gathering. So that's what we're trying to do. But our podcast is every Friday at 9:30 p.m. We have not recently put in out what we talk about during the week, but we are going to get back at that again, putting the topics beforehand, like that you guys can know what we're going to be talking about talking about the Magic the Gathering community. Right now we're talking about the cards that were banned, that are these two that are right here next to us, and then we're going to be talking about Commander, the new commanders that came out.
I I'm the filthy blue player, but I still think that banning Hold Reacher honestly was the right call. So people have debated the whole thing about like, oh, let's ban all the wheels instead and let Hold Reacher exist. And I'm like, no, because you're banning a bunch of cards that are fun to play. Yes, they're annoying, but still people get to play Magic unless you use them in conjunction with like an Ocean Thief or an Arcane. And even then, again, not the same issue as a Hold Reacher. Hold Reacher is too oppressive. Hold Reacher's effect never ends. It doesn't say until end of turn. It just keeps going. So even after you screwed everyone at the table, they are still screwed because you can keep wheeling them and it's going to keep happening. There's just too many upsides to playing Hold Reacher. And it's one color, 3 mana. You can play it so many colors. It has a lot of versatility. I get the whole idea of interaction. Just play more interaction. Stop being like a little Timmy and play stuff. You can interact with your opponent. Don't be the stupid player that just tries to do their own little thing and don't interact with the table. But to that I say, there's just some people who like to do that. And then having to deal with this kind of like weirdly oppressive card, it's kind of annoying at a casual table. In a competitive scenario, like if we had separate ban lists, I think this is fine in a competitive scenario because they have so much more interaction. They have like 1,000 cover spells that cost 0. So they can definitely stop this kind of thing. But in a casual table, in the rules. Yeah, in the play group, in the ban list that is created basically for casuals, it sucks if you're the one that has the Hold Reacher and then you screw everyone else because everyone's not playing on that level. Correct. And even if it's intermediate, like it's too good. It's like JP said, oh, I'm making this new deck. It's like Hold Reacher's so good, I'm just gonna stick it in, and it literally made it more consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too good. It's too good.
Yeah, it is, because let's put it this side. Let's say me, the Super Friends commander player, I can remove Summer Smothering Tithe, put Hold Reacher and maybe 2 wheels, and there you go. I got a bunch of mana.
Just have both.
Or both, exactly. Or both. And let people cry.
Yeah. I'll just play the safe version of Smothering Tide and Wheel of Fortune. That's the safe version.
The safe version. My
Osgear, I happen to have that one card.
Okay.
But I put Reforge the Soul and Wheel of Misfortune as well. The real expensive one is the Memory Jar.
Oh yeah.
Like I don't have that one. That one's expensive.
Yeah, went up in price during the pandemic, I believe.
Yeah, during the pandemic. That's when Wheel of Fortune got up. Because I got it for like a fraction of the cost of what it's worth right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's mostly the mana production. That's mostly the problem of the whole feature. Yeah.
Okay, so guys, give me a second. So Chris sent us a picture.
It's an arena code. It's fine.
It's an arena. Oh, he says it's from the stream.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay, let me go ahead and download it. Like that, we can go ahead and add it in a second.
I mean, let me help you. While you're doing that, I'm just gonna stick on the commanders.
Yeah, go ahead.
These are the 4 new commanders. Let me put it full screen. JP, you wanna read them?
Okay, it's Vrondis, Rage of Ancients. He's a 2/3 red green, so 5 mana for a legendary creature, Dragon Barbarian. So 5/4. He has the Enrage ability. Whenever Vrondis, Rage of Ancients is dealt damage, you may create a 5/4 red and green dragon spirit creature token with, when this creature deals damage, sacrifice it.
Yep.
Whenever you roll 1 or more dice, you may have Vrondis deal 1 damage to itself.
Yep.
Good. This is do you want to discuss each of them individually or can I just read them all? Let's just
read them all. Yeah.
Okay. There's Galia, Kindler of Hope. He's 1 green, white, and a blue, so 4 mana for a 4/4.
My bad.
Sorry. Legendary creature, Elf Knight. He has Vigilance. You may look at the top card of your library anytime. You may cast aura and equipment spells from the top card from the top of your library. When you cast an equipment spell this way, it gains when this equipment enters the battlefield, attach it to target creature you control.
Beautiful.
Then there's Sephiroth of the Hidden Ways. We get a white, blue, and black for a 2/3 legendary creature human wizard. Whenever one or more creature cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, venture into the dungeon. This ability triggers only once each turn. And then she has a create undead. Whenever you complete a dungeon, you return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Mm-hmm. Then we have Prosper Tomebound. 2 black and a red for a 1/4 legendary creature tiefling warlock, death touch. He has Mystic Arcanum. At the beginning of your end step, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card. And he has Pact Boon. Whenever you play a card from exile, create a treasure token.
Okay.
So it's all 4. So 2 of them have 2 colors, 2 of them have 3 colors.
Yes.
Okay.
General thoughts.
So before we go with the general thoughts, I'm gonna put this here a second. Let me see if I can
make it bigger.
Make it bigger, and as well, I will be adding the code in the chat like that. Whoever picks it in any of the 3 platforms, the first one gets the, I think it's 6 booster packs from Forgotten Realms,
yes,
in MTG Arena. So grab the code, enjoy it, and go ahead and start venturing some dungeons. This is thanks to Chris that he's not here with us, but at least he's here within his soul.
Here in spirit.
Okay, well,
here in spirit.
Okay. So I think that 3 of them have the potential to be pretty good commanders. I think only one of them kind of falters. And it falters because of the thing I usually complain about these new commanders that they put in these standard sets. It's when they are linked to the mechanic of the set. And the Sephiroth of the Hidden Ways is the one that I do not like at all, because it has to rely on the venture mechanic. Granted, it doesn't need anything else. It works on its own, because whenever one or more creatures in the battlefield, you venture into a dungeon, and when you complete a dungeon, you reanimate something. That's pretty cool. You can do a quick venturing into like the tomb, so it's 3 levels, and then you get to reanimate something. Or you can take the long route, venture 7 times, and then reanimate something. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, I think for those colors, it's fitting for those colors. But I feel the other 3 have more interesting things going on. The Gruul one, it's cool because it has an enrage ability. It's very Gruul. It's very aggressive. You know, there are red cards that ping creatures and do extra things. It's very Timmy in the way it's designed. Like, if you are someone who just wants to make a bunch of dragons and go nuts with it. And I think these dragons, oh, it's a dragon spirit. Okay, cool. And then you can just go nuts with it, ping them all around. It's fun. It's very Timmy in that regard. Gallia, it's a weak version of what Bant can do with aura and equipments, but it's another approach to it. I feel like it's good in a 99. I don't think it's good as a commander. You might stick this in a Tuasa deck and it's gonna go insane. You could stick it like as the commander and just have a bunch of equipments in the deck, just have like all the swords and have a bunch of cool equipments, and basically just you have a bunch of mana, which you can easily do in green, and you can probably go infinite with it. Just be casting like crazy from the top of your deck, and then just stick all the swords, and then just swing and win. It's very cool. But the most interesting one is the Rakdos one. The idea of exiling a card in the end of turn, and on your next turn, you can cast it. Whenever you cast it, you create a creature token. That opens a whole bag of worms. Treasure. It opens up a lot of bag of worms in terms of design space, because there's a lot of cards in specifically these colors that get exiled. And they get exiled, you can cast them later because the card says so or whatever, but now you're adding a treasure token to it. So you're ramping in colors which are not easy to ramp into, so that you can keep playing more and more stuff. like, I believe, madness cards go into exile. Yes. So if you're casting madness cards, every madness card that you cast, you're getting a free token, a free treasure token with it. That's just the first basic thing. There's
and
a lot
there's
of red
cheap, and there's a lot of cheap ones as well, like light up the stage.
Yep, exactly. So when you're casting stuff from exile, there's a bunch of red cards that do just that. Itali, you know, there's a bunch of cards. So this one is like the most interesting in terms of what Rakdos can do. Because you're ramping, you're doing crazy shenanigans in those colors. I think it's the most interesting one. And I don't play Rakdos usually. I just have the the vampire one.
Angie.
Which I love because it's Rakdos draw. That's all you do. You just draw. You don't win, except you have like one combo. And then when you don't do it, you lose. But I loved the idea of Rakdos drawing like a maniac. It seems like a crazy concept to me, and I loved it. That's why I bought into the deck and I tweaked it to make it like even faster. But this one is another interesting approach to Rakdos. So yeah, I feel like this is the most interesting one. Sephiroth, it's cool, but you know, yeah, that's it.
This is interesting. So for the Rakdos one, even because it says that whenever you play a card from exile, right?
Yeah.
Robber of the Rich.
Yeah, it's yeah.
You steal the card from your opponent and you play it from exile.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of red cards, probably black cards that I'm not thinking of right now, but there's a bunch of red cards that make you cast stuff from exile. There's a bunch of them.
Gonti, Lord of Luxury.
Oh, right. Gonti. Oh, my God. I forgot about Gonti. It's really good. Yeah, this is what I'm saying. There's a bunch of really good cards in those colors.
There's a bad one. It's called Treasure Trove. It's like 7 mana, five black block for enchantment. When it enters, you exile an opponent's graveyard, and then you can start casting that from the basically exile from there.
But that one, even if it's bad because it's 7 mana, it's really freaking good with that.
Exactly, because you start generating even more mana. And Treasure Trove from the time where exiling from anywhere and then casting your opponent's stuff didn't say you can spend any mana to cast it. So your own commander helps you cast all stuff.
Exactly.
So my opinion is, I feel like you undervalue Sephiroth a bit. But she is the weakest. You are correct in that.
Yeah.
My favorite is obviously Prosper, but I really like Vrondis.
Yeah, he's a great teamy commander.
So you say teamy until I make infinite 5/4s and smack you in the face out of nowhere.
That sounds like a teamy thing to me.
I gotta say, one of the things in my opinion of these commanders, I'm gonna look for some information now. So, commander decks right now are going for $40.
All right.
Depending on your LGS, so it could be $40. Right now in TCG player, the commanders are going $45 to almost $50 a commander. But I got to say something really interesting. I saw the deck list on each one, and I always go to the lands because I always like to see what they do. Did they add the same lands that they added on the previous commanders, or did they put something more spicy?
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because in these commanders, there's a lot of
good
dual
lands
and they're
good lands. Yeah.
Good lands. And it's really interesting that in these commanders, we at least got certain value. I'm not going to say monetary value, but as you as a player that wants to start commander, you can actually buy one of these and start good. If you really want to, like, I could say that you can go to YouTube right now and you can find videos or articles of creators saying, oh, with $50 you can make this commander way better.
Yeah.
My favorite one personally, I like Vrondis and obviously Prosper. I love Prosper.
Everyone kind of agrees that those are the two best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about Vrondis.
Go ahead.
The deck includes Heroic Intervention.
Oh, somebody got the code. Wait, let me put us in threes. And yeah, Jose Angel Pagan Lopez is, thanks for the arena code redeemed. I never miss your podcast. Oh, you thank you very much.
Enjoy.
Damn. Rondis, like, it brings heroic intervention, but one of the few upgrades you could, Darksteel Plate, it's 3 mana for an indestructible artifact that you pay 2 to equip it to your to a creature, and that creature becomes indestructible.
Yeah.
So you have heroic intervention, that's one. Something like Darksteel Plate. So this, anything with a token doubler, you're in green, so you have...
Which commander are you talking about?
Rondis right now. Rondis. The red-green one.
Yep. Red-green? There red, we go.
Yeah. So that one includes heroic intervention. It does not include...
Where is heroic intervention? What's
Actually, is heroic intervention in the no?
I think it's in Gallia.
Okay.
Insta heroic intervention. Here we go.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways,
and fun fact, it has new art as well.
Yeah, it has new art. It's better art in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, okay. So heroic intervention make your creature indestructible and hexproof. Darksteel Plate, you make your commander try to make your commander indestructible. There's other green and red ways to make your commander indestructible. The reason you want to make him indestructible is because you want to trigger Enrage several times. So with something like making him indestructible, a card like Warstorm Surge or Pandemonium, which happen to do the same thing. Except Pandemonium's a bit worse because it affects your opponent's creatures. So Warstorm Surge says whenever a creature enters the battlefield, it deals damage equal to its power to a target. If you have something like a Parallel Lives, you make 2/5/4 whenever Rondis is dealt damage. So you find a way to deal Rondis damage, or you play a creature and deal damage to Rondis. You make 2 5/4s. One of the 5/4s deals 5 damage to someone, the other 5/4 deals damage to Rondis.
Yep.
You make 2 5/4s again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and you just kind of burn the table out. Without the actual burning, I know I figured out a way to make infinite 5/4s. You still have to make Rondis indestructible.
You can have an anger in the graveyard, or literally have any enchantment that has haste.
There is a commander that brings anger, and I think it's his. If I'm not mistaken,
it should. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
I'm gonna put this in my side.
It does.
Sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It does bring anger on the Dragonic Rage commander.
So the whenever you roll one or more dice, that's basically flavor text.
Yeah, it's never gonna happen.
It's generally speaking, there's just not many, if any, proper deck where you can roll dice. There are cards that you can roll dice, and I would play.
Yeah.
Unless if you include like the unstable cards, because unstable brought a lot of roll dicing.
You don't need
cards.
To. I mean,
yeah,
unless
you're
being
you don't
killed.
Need to. Need to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unless your play group lets you play roll dicing cards, then yes, unstable cards. I mean, because if I'm not mistaken, in unstable there is I think it's an artifact that lets you re-roll the dice and.
I mean, we already have Barbarian class that just lets you roll two twice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go.
You have currently legal ways, like commander legal ways to play, to roll that more dice, but it's not really worth it. The one card I feel like is like a must-have is Pyrohemia for this deck. So Pyrohemia reads, it's a 2 red-red. At the beginning, it's an enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, if there are no creatures on the battlefield, sacrifice Pyrohemia, and you can pay red to deal 1 damage to each creature and each player.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play 3 red, deal 3 damage to everyone, 3 damage to Abrandis, make 3 5/4s. Next turn, do it again as long as you have the mana. You keep on doing that.
Okay.
You expedite your 5/4s really, really fast. That's why I really like him, because you'd be surprised that he sticks in the field and you have an engine, you just suddenly on your next turn, you have an army of 5/4s ready to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Surface of the Hidden Ways. I feel like you undervalue her, mostly because I know how she should play, because okay. she plays my style of deck. You just slap on an Ophiomancer, you slap on mm-hmm. a National's Altar, and every single turn in your upkeep, you make a snake, sacrifice a snake, venture.
Yeah, yeah.
In your upkeep, I venture. In your upkeep, I venture. You venture every single turn, try to trigger her as many times as possible. The reason
it's
I say
interesting
she's still
how
bad.
JP
she's so bad because she's limited too.
No,
how, the most she's limited to once part per is turn. The most interesting thing is that JP puts Astronaut's Altar in anything.
Yeah, it's really funny.
It's my favorite card. Anyways, so it says once per turn. That's if it weren't once per turn, it'd be broken.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Let's be honest. Yeah. And but the real thing I feel like makes her. Like, once per turn is just balancing reasons. I'm fine with that. The real reason I don't like it is because she says when create undead, she reanimates from your graveyard. She should have just targeted any graveyard. Just reanimate anything.
Sure.
That would have made her a lot better.
Okay. So yeah, it makes sense.
You can expedite Tomb of Annihilation. Finish up Tomb of Annihilation. Everyone has to sacrifice a creature, has to do stuff. Okay. I finished the dungeon. I take your creature.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been nice.
Yeah.
But she doesn't. Galia's just good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that she's top deck manipulation. So you stick in Sunset's Divine Top, Ponder, you Preordain, Brainstorm, all those cantrips that mess with the top. You reorganize. The real good thing about her is when you play the equipment, you just attach it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can ignore the equip cost for the most part. And a lot of people don't evaluate the same way. So most of the time, I feel like equipments aren't worth it for most things. It's mostly because people see, oh, you pay 2 mana to play it, but then you need to pay like 8 mana to equip it. That's a 10 mana that's a 10 mana investment.
Mm-hmm.
And if then someone just kills your creature, you just paid mana for nothing. You did nothing. So so when it enters and attaching to something, now I can just consider the actual mana cost. So swords, something like Argentum Armor becomes a 6 mana instead of being 12 mana.
Mm-hmm.
A new Darksteel Plate and all that stuff. You're in the colors for drawing cards. You just
and for ramping, so you have a bunch of mana. You can probably make infinite mana very easily.
Play all the enchantresses, including Sram. Sram's just gonna draw you a lot of cards with it. Like you just play all the enchantresses, just draw a million cards, organize.
You can use
and then just smack in.
Mm-hmm.
You can go ahead and use that rings of
Brighthearth.
Brighthearth with Basalt Monolith. You got infinite colorless mana.
Yeah.
You know,
you could do that, but I don't feel like that's the deck. This is the deck for that type of combo.
But you can do it because
yeah,
you just
exactly.
need colorless mana though.
Yeah, no, but she cares about auras too, and most of the enchantresses care about enchantments.
Sweep everything. Okay, but when you the aura you need color mana for it. But if you do strictly like an equipment one.
Exacto.
Well, why
if you do a full equipment commander,
though.
It will be good.
True,
the enchantresses just help so much speed up this type of deck. You just draw through your deck.
True.
Like you can't. You're like it's not even only cantripping. You gain extra cards by playing one.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Enchantresses get crazy really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like with the new ones. I'm pretty sure there's a billion in these colors.
Yeah, yeah.
And now
these are the colors.
So, Prosper. He's a 1 mana. He's a 4 mana. It's like he's 1/4 Death Touch. That's actually relevant. I feel you can block with him, and he's like a little rattle snake. Nobody wants to attack you because you're just gonna okay. It dies.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's actually quite relevant, and I'm kind of surprised that Orengo didn't mention it.
Give him first strike and make people cry.
I generally don't attack.
You're not attacking. You're blocking.
No,
attack me.
Yeah,
I generally,
but
my decks don't attack.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't attack.
I'm just gonna win. Okay, does it affect me? I don't care.
But yeah, Prosper, the actual deck, talking about the actual decks, Brondis is great. Galia is great. Galia is broken in the cards that, like, Galia is by far the best value.
Yes, it is. By a lot.
Brondis is really, really good. Zephyrus is just good stuff, and not even expensive good stuff. It's just general good stuff. Prosper's kind of bad. Yep. But Prosper himself, like the actual commander, is the best one.
Yep. Agree.
Because that list isn't really not that good. Like, Brondis and Galia by far the best. Brondis second close. Zephyrus, because it's good stuff. It just has, like, it brings Baleful Strix, Solemn Simulacrum, Hostage Taker. It brings Phantasmal Image, Suntime, Karmic Guide.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of cards I would play just naturally in my decks.
Mm-hmm.
Even brings a Reassembling Skeleton.
Yep.
So,
Galia has definitely the most.
Galia has the best value.
The value that it has.
But the great thing about this is, like I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, it's the fact of the lands. The thing that the mana fixing in each of these commanders are really good. Like, I don't remember which one was it. I think it's either Galia or Zephyrus. It even has the old school tapped fetch lands, grassland and floodplain. You know, the ones that enter tap, you have to untap like that. You can use it to fetch for an island or a plane. You know, it's really interesting how Wizard of the Coast is like, they were like, okay, you know what? Let's just give them a little bit more value for their buck in these commanders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like the previous commanders that the ones from Kaldheim was it? Yeah, for Kaldheim. In between both of them, the one that you would have gotten more value in terms of, like, if you wanted to start commander, is the elves one, because it brings you literally all the lords and a new lord.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that you're missing is
the really expensive
elves,
ones.
The elves champion.
Elvish
champion.
The one that gets +1/+1 is Forest Walk.
Exactly. Like, that's the only one that you're missing, and then you just
I think you're missing another one, but it was like a less important one.
Yeah, the other one would be it's the other one that creates mana. Tatiana, I think it's called.
Priest of Titania?
Yeah, Priest of Titania does not come in the commander.
Okay.
This one comes with the elf from Origins. It comes with the other lord, the one
Elvish
that
is like Elvish champion. No,
Elvish Archdruid. It comes with the new one that gives you 3 mana, and it comes with the one that creates tokens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that it's really interesting that in these commanders, obviously, if you're a new player, you can buy any to start off. But in regards to us, that we know what we want to do, you know, like, oh, or either I'm missing cards, or I want to have a new commander, but I'm looking for a specific card in the deck. Like, let's say Heroic Intervention. It's a $9 card, but still, you don't want. Sometimes you don't want it. You want your, how you call it, the value out of what you're paying. So
Galia is, like, value.
Exactly.
It's just value. It's so
no, yeah, but let's put it that what I'm trying to say is that, let's say that you're looking for Heroic Intervention. You don't want to waste the $9, but hey, you want to have one of the new commanders. You have the Heroic Intervention and the commander as well. You know, it's a win-win situation. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So. But I really do like them. They look really hella fun in terms of, like, I really do want to see if we get to play with people that have built commanders around these.
I want to see Prosper in action.
Yeah, I want to see Prosper.
Prosper, because I was looking for, like, at least 2 cards for each deck. and I mentioned a bunch for Brondis, a bunch for Galia, and like a few for Zapdos. But Prosper, like one of the most broken cards in recent Commander history, is literally in red, is Jeskka's Will.
Yeah.
I realize how strong that card is. With this Commander,
Jeskka's Will is that card that red, people are sleeping on it.
Yes. Two in a red, choose one. If you control Commander, as you cast the spell, you may choose both. Add red mana for each card in target opponent's hand, and then exile the top three cards of your library. You may play them this turn. So it's three mana, draw three, add mana. In red.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other card is, this came out in the Strixhaven, Commander? The Rousing Refrain. So it's one of those suspend cards. It's add a red mana for each card in target opponent's hand. But until end of turn, you don't lose that mana. Exile Rousing Refrain with three time counters on it. So you keep on doing it. And you're cast it since you're suspending, and you cast it from exile. You keep adding mana. But this is a lot of mana really, really fast.
Okay.
So you can be very explosive. Like, you play this on... It's three for one in a red. No. You do this on turn three. You play your commander on turn... you do this on turn two. You play your commander on turn four. On turn five, you get this for free. Make a treasure token. About a bunch of mana go off.
Yeah.
So, JP, you made somebody... he's like, I remember... JP used that against me once. I played Krenko.
Oh. You're a horrible human.
I think if people go to our Commander Nights, they would say that each one of us is a horrible human.
That's true.
Hey, I don't make you suffer that much.
No.
You liar.
You liar. You're like, it's turn two. I cast my commander.
Fair, my commander, so most of my commanders is like three mana, four mana. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
I could turn one Ayata with Dark Ritual.
Well, I also play Narset, so we are all bad.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay, it's fair. I think we all have that one commander that is annoying as heck.
True.
Like, right now, I'm building the Tazri deck commander. I'm still sitting down, like I told Orengo in the afternoon, like, I'm still, like, researching how to combine the venture mechanic with the party mechanic, because I want to have a little bit of both in the commander, do 2/4 because it's the theme is D&D, but I want to make it work. That's the whole thing. I had to proxy the Squirrel Commander because, god dang, them cards are super expensive.
Mostly because people just hyped it up way too much.
But at least the cards that are doable in terms of pricing, I will buy them little by little. But I played with the commander. It's super fun. I played versus with our friend Carlos, and I killed them with a bunch of squirrels. It was so satisfying.
My God.
Yes. The only thing that I'm still like trying to get used to is how to stack the multiplying the tokens, because you have to know how to stack because of the math with Chatterfang in game.
You just don't do that.
You do that.
Just stop it. Just stop playing.
You just lay down. You play your deck. You draw your seven cards. Yeah. You say, I'm playing Chatterfang General, and then you just scoop up.
It's like, oh, that was a fun game.
It was a fun game.
I'm really happy because this set actually brings a lot of promise in all different formats. For standard, it's making a lot of noise. In the metagame right now, mono green midrange is number one, and then sadly but true, mono red still in the top five. It's number two right now in the metagame for standard. There is this
Soul Tide Control appears like
exactly Soul Tide Control. That's what that's
maybe Soul Tide Control is probably played more, but Mono Red just is better. Because right now in the metagame, just looking at MTG Goldfish, is like the numbers are a bit off. But yeah, basically, Mono Green, Soul Tide Control, and Mono Red aggro.
No, yeah, it's again this set. I like this set because it looks a lot of fun. I do like the fact that we did get like the borderless, and then we got the D&D like showcase cards, and then we got those special D&D book style. I like the fact that those cards are only like 6 cards. And they're not a bunch, you know, that they didn't, Wizard of the Coast did not make a lot of those showcase cards because, you know, it would be in a pain, but at least they're doable to get. I want to get my playset of Evolving Wilds because they look beautiful. I do follow a lot of proxy card creators, and there's a lot of them that had already created Demonic Tutor, Sylvan Library
in that same art style.
Yeah, in that same art style, and it looks amazing. And I've seen them foil, and they look great.
I'd probably just stick that same art style for the lands, not maybe the other cards, but I feel like it'll work out anyways.
You know what I would have preferred? I'm not gonna say preferred. Let me change. So you know what I would have liked? You know that each land, basic land, has like a text, like a little lore.
Story.
I would have liked to see that in full art as well. You know,
but how are you gonna write full, it?
You put, instead of having a I wish I had a card with me. Okay, so here you go. So you know that we have this little box, right? So you eliminate the box and just put the wording in, like if it was transparent.
Like just over it.
The text over it, like if it was over it and that's it. You know, you have the full card, full art, no border, just says swamp. Like a little small border on the top, or how do you call it, heading? You put a heading on the top and then the lore on the bottom with no board, with no casing or nothing. It's just the lettering, like, land, basic land, and then the lore, and that's it. Really? It would have been nice to have that little treatment.
I actually like it how it is. There's a bunch of like this it's just different. We've been doing in just recent times, we've gotten full art snow covered, we have got full art basic lands, and the novelty of them is still there because they're beautiful. The art is great, but this just having the normal thing, but instead of just being an island, it has a proper like little story for each card. I actually do kind of like that.
Okay.
Fair enough.
You know, but again, I really do like this set. So guys, okay. So before we say our goodbyes, I'm going to start with Orengo. Give me a second. How much do you rate this set in a whole with the commanders? With the commanders out as well.
Between 0 out of 10 goblins.
Okay.
A goblin four, and a half.
Four goblins. I'm being generous. I think I feel like the set overall, because you know I play commander. That's the thing I play the most. So for me,
we made it clear in one show. I haven't done the clip yet, but I already have it in Premiere. I have it already with the little tabs. We bring a broad statement in that clip. We'll put it during the week.
So since I play commander, these cards, most of them, the majority of them, have no effect on me, except a couple that I'm gonna buy when you know the set officially releases. But I feel generally it's a fun set. It's cool. It'll be impactful in 2022, but as it stands, because of Throne of Eldraine, because of Theros, it's not as powerful. It's not as impactful. There's a lot of gimmicky stuff.
that I don't think is going to be used even when stuff rotates out. So I give it a 4 out of 10 goblins. The commanders don't excite me. They're cool, but I didn't rush to buy any of them. Osgear excited me because Osgear was different. And the Simic one excited me because it was like a broken ass Simic commander. So that's exciting. It's not even broken. It's just really good. It's the Rakdos one.
And it can be broken.
But
there's probably someone just made a whole list. Okay, you do this cards, and then you just basically you start casting everything for free, making mana, and then just keep on casting. So there's probably someone.
But I feel like there's better red commanders. You know what I'm like? Better Rakdos commanders. I feel like there is. Osgear is kind of like on a class of its own. That's why he's really good. And most the Simic one.
Most Rakdos commanders are just smacking face.
True.
This was very controlling and drawing cards.
Yeah, fair enough.
This deck would draw. I feel like Prosper wants to draw a lot of cards.
Yeah, it does. And you can make it happen with red. This gear is in a class of its own. That's why I like it a lot. And the Simic one, if you care about tokens, it's like the best interpretation of Simic for that. Like it's on a class of its own. How good that is.
Just triple. Your tokens, quadruple your tokens.
Yeah, it's freaking insane. So in terms of, you know, the commanders and stuff like that, I kind of like the Strixhaven's ones, even though I think that set was trash. It was like full-on trash, so bad. Even this D&D set has the creature lands, which I at least appreciate, so at least it has that going on. But Strixhaven for me was complete trash. It has nothing interesting there. So 4 out of 10 goblins.
Okay, so before I go with JP, so Jose Angel Pagan is asking us a question. When are you guys going to bring more Commander gameplay content? I enjoy the salt of your playgroup.
I mean, we can set it up maybe next week or something.
Yeah, we can set it up next week. Like I mentioned, I think in the mid and almost very halfway show of the programming, I did mention that we are going to meet up on Wednesday to properly set everything in stone on what we're going to do future content, and we're going to be bringing you guys more Commander content, and we're figuring out ways on how to play Commander as well, due to that we do not have all the cards, so we're trying to find other ways to play Commander and just enjoy the game as well. So JP, tell me, in overall, from 0 to 10 goblins, how do you review this set?
I'm gonna say 5 3/4 of a goblin. A goblin missing a leg. It's just okay. 5 and a goblin missing a leg.
Okay. I can see that happening.
You've been through some shit. Yeah.
We have to do art.
Yeah.
So I feel like I want to give it a 6. I really do want to give it a 6.
Okay.
But it's mostly because the flavor is there. Is there. It's an iconic set for an iconic game. The reason I'm giving it, I'm giving it a 6. I'm just giving him.
He has the foot now.
He grew his leg back. Again. Yay.
He grew his leg back. Good.
I'm giving it a 6. It's impacted Standard more than I thought it would. At least from what I've seen currently through this past week. So it's impacted Standard a lot more than what I feel like Kaldheim did. A lot more than what I feel Strixhaven did. And a lot more than Ikoria.
Yeah.
Like, Eldraine is still, of course,
it's a big honcho. It's a main honcho.
But this is every single deck I've seen at least has one or two cards from the set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite impactful. Like,
if you see the mono green midrange, it has a lot.
Yeah. We talked about the wolf, the 3 mana, the 2 mana 3/3. If you have two of them, you just attack with both and draw two cards. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like a lot of these good cards, and I feel like it's for being what would be in the place of a core set, you're getting this. Its power level is quite, it's quite high in comparison to a core set, and it's quite impactful. Core sets generally bring like evergreen cards, which is what we should have needed for Field of Ruin, but it's still very, very good. I'm not giving it a 7 because there's nothing that just wows me. The commanders were good. Like, I enjoy the concept of that Brandis deck, and Prosper seems like hella fun. But Galia's just Bant. It's like, okay, I'm doing Bant stuff, and the Esper one is disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the commanders, that because of the commanders, the power level isn't like it's high, it's good, but not that high, and it's quite impactful. I'm giving it a 6. I feel like that's a decent rating.
Okay, so at least I in the set and with the commanders, I would give it 5 little goblins. Again, the set is really flavorful. I really do like the mechanic. I would have liked to see at least one or two cards that brought the party mechanic, just for fun, you know, just to maintain that mechanic alive. That's why I would have liked to see one or two cards with that mechanic, just to keep the Zendikar Rising mechanic relevant. In theory, it has it, but still it's not there, because like I explained to Orengo, you have to study the cards before you say I want that and this and this and this in the Tazri commander, because you need to pick the correct creature types, because you have dragon knights, you have elf rogues, you have wizard zombies, you know, you have a little bit of everything, so you want to make sure that you do have the complete party for certain mechanics when you want to build this type of commander. But still, another thing that I would have preferred to see more, the fact that there's only 3 dungeons, and I would have liked to see more dungeons. I hope that in the future, we do get, I don't know, I really do not want to say this, but probably it might happen. We might get a secret lair that it's only dungeons, and it might happen.
There's a little tidbit to this. I don't know who it was, one of the lead designers of the set or whatever, or it was talking about parasitic design, but they did mention that if ever they reintroduce dungeons, they're going to be tied to the set. So you're not going to be able to use dungeons from another set. If they reintroduce dungeons, you won't be able to use them.
See,
which I think is stupid.
Exactly.
Stupid.
That's stupid.
So stupid.
You know? Because,
but in modern or any other eternal format, if they bring broken ones, then maybe something can come out of that.
I hope it'd be cool.
I hope
more dungeons eventually.
Yeah, I hope that they do add more dungeons, and they can work all in general. Like, they can put a rule, like, let's say that they get to do 10 dungeons and you can only have 3.
Yeah,
like in selective for yourself, you can only have 3 in the game that you're playing. But because I would have really liked to see more dungeons, due to the fact that Dungeons and Dragons has such a big lore. You know, we're talking about a game that was in, I think it was 1970 something that started, or earlier, I don't know, you know. But I give it 5 goblins, 5 little goblins. And before we say our goodbyes, Gunny Lim says commander is 50% style for me. Okay, I would say something about that. You know, just if you have a favorite commander, bling it out. Hey, do like Cassius Marsh.
Every single, but in the Puerto Rico humidity, just imagine that every single card is foiled.
Pringled.
You just have a Pringle deck. It's just one on top of the other.
Hey guys, brought my deck today.
That's why I always recommend, if you're going to foil out your commander, keep it in your deck box. Never leave it outside.
Never use it. Just keep it there forever. You know
exactly.
What? Never play commander
with
it.
It's for show.
Yes.
You know, that's why we should actually make it topic about that. Why do we bling out our commanders or look for like proxy cards to like make it look cooler? That would be a good topic. But yeah, like again, this set is really fun. I played it already in draft in arena. I'm still missing to play it in the sealed format. I want to see how sealed goes. But in draft is really fun. It's really interesting on how you pick the cards. But I would say again, this set is really fun. I hope it keeps doing the impact that it's doing to bring more players to the game or to Commander, because I know that Commander is becoming one of the most playable or played formats right now in Magic. But hey, it is what it is, guys, you know? So let's go ahead and say our goodbyes. JP, where can they find you?
You can find me here in the Cardboard Cave podcast, and hopefully in a lot more content we'll be making further on in the future.
Awesome. So, Orengo, where can they find you?
You can find me here at Cardboard Cave. You can find me at Movie Guy, Tuesdays and Thursdays, where we talk about movie stuff. You can also find me in my podcast, Cine Más Podcast, where I go very in-depth in specific movies that I want to talk about. You know, talk about themes, metaphors, etc.
Artsy stuff.
Artsy stuff. Artsy pinkies up, my friends. You can also find me at 15 in Richport, which I collaborate with them in the podcast of Cine Nerds, where we also kind of discuss sometimes artsy films, sometimes not so artsy films. We're going to be discussing next week the movie Starship Troopers and the movie The Holy Grail, which are amazing.
Like Monty Python?
Yes. Monty Python.
And the Holy Grail.
Yeah, it's a great freaking film. We're going to be discussing those two. And you can also find me at Subtitles Required with John. We're going to be filming our next episode very soon, recording our next episode very soon. And it's going to be about the film Burning, which is one of the actors is Steven Yeun, which you have seen in The Walking Dead, being bashed in the head and killed. And you've seen him in Minari, being like a sad boy. It's going to be a fun podcast, I'm pretty sure. But beyond that, you can Google me. You can Google my name. I make movies. I don't have my cup. Over there, I forgot to put it on my table. But you can Google me, I make movies.
And then, guys, you guys can find me and all my social media as BigBoss117PR. I do my streams every Wednesday. I am playing currently right now Diablo 3 with the Necromancer. So technically speaking, we can say that I am playing Dungeons & Dragons in a different world. But the other thing is you can find me in the Movie Guy podcast as well. Like Orengo said, but this next Monday, I will have my new episode live of Up, Up, Left, Right, finishing off all the last three movies of Resident Evil. That what I do is I just go ahead and talk about the movie, what's good, what's bad, and what did work and what did not work in this film. That most of it is that it did not work. And
they're
how
all
they
horrible had, masterpieces.
Exactly. Like and that. How they had to retcon so many things so on the final film. Yeah. And then as well, Subtitles Required, that is the show that is Orengo and mine's that we talk about foreign films. Our next episode will be recorded this week, and we're going to be talking about Burning. Steven Yeun comes out in that episode. And I got a fun fact for you, Orengo. He comes out in one episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, he does?
Yes. Only one episode. He was the second roommate that Sheldon has.
Shoot, I'm going to have to find the episode. I must have been a blink and I missed it because I don't remember.
Literally, I saw him and I'm like, nah, it can't be. I went to IMDb. I'm like, oh my God, it is.
That's awesome.
It was awesome, you know. And then here, guys, here at the Cardboard Cave, like JP mentioned, we're going to be working on more content for you guys. Oh, wait. I got something to say. You can find me in TikTok as well.
Ooh, you're doing TikTok now.
I'm doing TikTok. I'm joining the kids. I'm doing MTG TikToks. I have only three right now. It has been fun. You know, it's an experience. I'm still getting used to the whole editing thing on the phone. It's horrible, horrible software, but hey, it is what it is. But it's super fun. A lot of people have commented in some of them, and I have made conversations with them as well. It talks about Magic the Gathering, so that's one of the pluses that I found with trying TikTok. It's really interesting. I never thought that I was gonna join the TikTok club.
Nice.
So Nothing Guys, let me look for the brand. Here we go. So Nothing Guys, I hope you guys all, everybody, enjoyed tonight's show. It was really fun. It was really good. And we will see you next Friday. During the week, we'll be announcing what we will be talking about this next Friday. And probably news about future content that we're going to be making. But I want you guys to just go ahead, and here is a message from our, you know, that amazing sponsor of ours. So see you guys in the next one.